Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Every year, about 1.5 million people start internships in the hopes of getting their foot in the door at their dream job. But about half of those internships don't pay. It was only last month that the Senate approved a $5 million fund to finally begin compensating interns on Capitol Hill. That money still needs to be approved by the House, but the effort was spearheaded by a nonprofit group called Pay Our Interns.
Being an intern on the Hill as a person of color, you realize that there are few people that look like you, and that's actually really disheartening. The people that I could relate to were the individuals that were cleaning bathrooms or cleaning the hallways.
That's Guillermo Creamer, the chief of staff at Pay Our Interns.
You realize that the people that don't look like you, you know, they all tend to come from a similar background. You know, they all have the extra funds to go out after work and to do happy hour. When I had to rush back to go to class because I was interning, working, and taking a full course load at the same time.
Guillermo was an unpaid congressional intern in 2014 and interned in the D.C. mayor's office the year after that. Beyond needing the money to live, Guillermo says that unpaid internships don't consider the discomfort that occurs when interns can't afford what's required for the job.
One of the things that happens when you're an intern, especially on the Hill, is you have to wear suits. You know, the one suit I owned was not a black suit, for example. It was kind of a greenish, tannish suit. So I knew whenever I'd rewear that, it was recognizable that I was rewearing the same thing. And so that was difficult.
Guillermo eventually had to drop his congressional internship to take a babysitting job. But today, he says being in an advocacy group means he can fight for everyone to have access to an internship that could launch a career.
Unpaid interns eventually become staffers, and staffers eventually become LDs or chief of staff. And that individual can then one day want to run for office. So allowing that gateway to be there, you know, it really stuck with them.
And it's not just DC interns, of course. All types of industries, including the media, use unpaid interns. I sat down with Ross Perlin, author of Intern Nation, to talk about what unpaid internships mean for this generation of workers.
I was an unpaid intern myself. Like the vast majority of people that I knew felt kind of pressured and even forced at a certain point to work unpaid, doing real work for a significant period of time. And it wasn't until then that I looked around and saw that, you know, everyone around me was feeling this pressure to do an internship. And I told my family what I was doing. And my grandparents said, "Oh, wonderful, you're going to become a doctor." And I had to explain to them, actually, no, this, you know, is now something that everybody has to do. Yes, the term comes from medicine. It was originally in the medical profession that there was this idea, but now it's everywhere. I told my parents, they understood that much. But when I told them I was going to do it unpaid, they said, "Unpaid? We've never heard of people working unpaid." So that's when I realized that this was a relatively new phenomenon just in the last few decades that had become completely normalized. And it was something nobody had really talked about.
And what type of change did we see over the past couple of decades that's led to more of these unpaid internships?
In some ways, the most significant one was a cultural change by which, you know, this was an era of the decline of organized labor, of a lack of consciousness really about work and working conditions. There is a law around this. There is the Fair Labor Standards Act. Minimum wage is, you know, you have to pay that for people who work, at least minimum wage. Of course, this was a period of minimum wage stagnation. And there was kind of this loophole, basically, where a traineeship or an apprenticeship that was really an educational experience could be unpaid for a short period of time. And through that loophole, you know, a giant truck was driven, and a whole range of industries just started to adopt this, not even understanding the legal situation. It was accepted, oh, this must be legal, this must be fine. And of course, it was a more competitive kind of economy, everyone trying to get into the white-collar economy where internships really took hold. The, in many ways, very positive apprenticeship model, which is much deeper in the blue-collar world and still is, was sort of forgotten on the way to the white-collar world, and no real robust, paid, equalizing path to white-collar work was established.
And so what are the implications of that? I mean, I did my first internship when I was 14 in financial services, not something that I've obviously gone into, but that was paid. Many people do not get paid internships. What are the implications?
So for young people, on top of rising student debt, record levels of tuition, youth unemployment being, you know, extraordinarily high since 2008. This has delayed a whole generation from kind of taking the steps, the traditional steps into adulthood, the traditional milestones of having an independent income and being able to, you know, have a secure place to live and establish relationships and so on. So it's had generational implications for those who've gone through it. It's changed the complexion of certain professions that...
Literally.
Literally. The complexion in terms of, you know, in terms of diversity, you know, who can enter these fields. So disproportionately affecting women as well, who are more represented in unpaid internships and in the fields where unpaid internships dominate, people of color, people from, you know, working class backgrounds, who just cannot afford to work unpaid. You know, I think it's contributing to these record level of income inequality as well. So it's really kind of something that has insidiously worked its way into our whole society.
We've also seen some changes happening in the federal government when it comes to paying interns, which a lot of folks were even, I think, surprised that senators weren't paying their interns. What are other industries that particularly abuse this privilege? And I think we're sort of in one right now, right? Media?
Unfortunately, the media is one of these fields where I think as the media has struggled to, you know, to find profit in the digital realm and changing business models, this is often an excuse that different professions use, different fields, you know, when it's not clear how profits are going to be made or there's some kind of transition. Well, you know, at least we can get unpaid interns in there. Yeah, we don't have the budget to actually hire anyone there, but let's get some interns in there. Politics is definitely one. And this news from the Senate, that the Senate is finally deciding, I mean, they had grandfathered themselves sort of out where they had given themselves an exception. The amount of unpaid labor in politics is staggering.
And yet the amount of wealth in Congress is also staggering. We've done some reporting here that shows that there is a significant amount of wealth among the members of Congress.
Yeah, usually it's not a lack of funds really that is driving unpaid internships. It's just the feeling that you can get away with this. And so unfortunately, it's very much true of politics. It's very much true of media, fields that really shape our whole society. So then what kinds of voices get heard? What kinds of voices emerge in those fields? It's very troubling to think about then the larger implications.
I mean, I'm thinking also it's an economic concern, but it's also a cultural and social concern. Let's say you are able to get the internship, right? And if you don't come from a stable economic background, you know, you've got to dress for the internship depending on where you are. You've got to be able to do social things depending on what internship you have. And so I think that even if you can afford to do it, you're still at a disadvantage if you're low income. Right.
One of the most significant things is just the cities where these internships are concentrated, the rent, the cost of living, which has gone through the roof. I mean, if you think about, yeah, internships are in places like New York and D.C. and L.A. And to be able to, you know, to afford to stay even just for a summer, you know, it takes resources now, serious resources to be able to get into these fields. And it shouldn't be that way. And in many ways, it didn't used to be that way, because if you were getting paid a decent wage for doing the work, you could afford to do it and to enter.
What does the law say about this? You mentioned the Fair Labor Standards Act. I'm just curious, there have to be laws on the books that say if someone is working and providing a service, they should be paid for that service.
The Fair Labor Standards Act was part of this whole New Deal package that ended child labor, that established overtime, and it also established the minimum wage. But most internships in the for-profit world, the nonprofit world is a little more complicated because nonprofits are allowed to have volunteers. But in the for-profit world, you can't have volunteers, and interns were doing work, in some cases very sophisticated and important bottom-line work. So interns began to sort of challenge this, bringing legal challenges against the companies that had not paid them. Part of why they had to do that was just because the Department of Labor was not enforcing these laws at all. So this is what people had to do. Some of those cases are still working their way through the courts. Unfortunately, in this legal environment, to get any kind of decision on behalf of people who are working is difficult.
Ross Perlin is the author of Intern Nation, How to Earn Nothing and Learn Little in the Brave New Economy. Ross, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks very much.
My name is Annika, and I'm calling from Middletown, Connecticut. I believe that internships should be paid, because when they're unpaid, only the rich can accept them, and that's not fair.
Hey, this is Jennifer Wolf calling from Los Angeles. In the summer of 1990, between my junior and senior years of college, I got an unpaid internship at a radio station in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and it changed the whole course of my senior year and pretty much my life. I mean, I'm still in radio, and now I pay it forward because I know what a difference you can make when you mentor someone.
Hi, this is Frank from Westbury, New York. Internships should be paid or compensated in some other way. Companies are making money off of people and need to give people something besides the prestige of working for that company.
Hi, this is Kate from Milford, Massachusetts, and I think if it's a few hours a week, it's fine for it to be unpaid as long as you're earning college credit, but if it takes the time of a job, if it's full-time or part-time, then it needs to be paid.
This is Holly Freeman in Portland, Oregon. My wife had a paid internship during graduate school. It was an important direct work experience in public health, and it led directly to her first job. Unpaid internships benefit people who have other means of support, which leads to inequitable internship access.
Internships should pay at least minimum wage and reimburse travel to and from.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to The Takeaway. We say it a lot, but we really mean it. Our listeners are the most important part of our show. We want to hear from you. Jump into the discussion on our Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter at The Takeaway. We retweet. And keep listening. Thanks again.